Now that the potential impeachment of Ivory has come and gone, student government has returned to some sense of normalcy. It has been more than a week since DJ's informational, and he's been spending more time at dorm with his classes and SGA. In fact, right now, DJ is at a gospel concert featuring Kirk Franklin. The concert is co-sponsored by SGA. DJ isn't entirely sure how SGA was able to pay for it, but as vice president, he had no control over the finances. Truth be told, not even the Senate had power over SGA's finances. So, instead of worrying about it, DJ simply enjoyed the situation. He spent the better part of his day trying to secure tickets for his friends. As a member of student government, DJ would normally go backstage to talk to musical guests. But DJ was so exhausted from his late nights with pain, studying, trying to give his friends enough of his time, and work with SGA, that he opted to simply sit with the public and read his text messages before being summoned to do something he really didn't want to do. As he settled in, DJ pulled out his cell phone and began reading his missed text messages. He missed 3 texts from Payne and 2 texts from a number he didn't recognize. DJ immediately turned off his red receipts to read the texts from the unknown number. It read, "Yo, bruh, meet here at the frat house at 10 p.m. The second text read, "What, you ain't interested no more?" DJ didn't really know what to make of the text message. It wasn't the number he was told to look out for, so he read the messages from Payne instead of responding to the unknown number. Payne found out that DJ hadn't responded yet and was trying to get DJ to respond to the dean of the line. After reading Payne's messages, DJ ran out of the dome so he could call and talk to Payne. That was an easy enough task. DJ had on sneakers, jeans, a cap, and a long-sleeve t-shirt. He was wearing what everyone helping the event had on. DJ actually started calling Payne while he was running. When Payne picked up, DJ could sense the panic in his voice. "Where have you been? We've been trying to contact you." "I've been working on the gospel concert for SGA. I told you about that this morning, remember?" "Oh yeah, you sure did. Well, how soon can you get here?" "The text I got said to be there for 10 p.m. It's just 7 p.m. now." "No, no. You need to get here before then. If you arrive later, that will make you look bad. Get here." "Are you already there? Why are you talking to me while you're there?" "It's okay. I got this. Everyone else is downstairs. Some of the guys are already here." "What do you have on?" DJ laughed. He assumed it was some sort of foreplay, so he didn't respond. "I'm serious, Donnie. What do you have on?" asked Payne. "Jeans, t-shirt, and sneakers." DJ laughed to himself at Payne for insinuating a dress code was needed. But under the circumstances, he decided to simply respond, then laughing on the phone. "Don't wear our colors or the colors of other fraternities." "Well, that doesn't leave me with much." "You mean I can't even wear white?" "Nah, that's a basic color. You can wear basic colors." "Okay, I'll just come with a white t-shirt on." "Oh, don't wear underwear that are too colorful." "Why does that matter?" "Because from time to time, y'all will get naked in front of us." "Oh, well, I don't know if I can do that. You know, I'll be hard and they'll think the wrong thing." And now it was Payne's turn to laugh. "Yeah, you all hard all the time, but we don't ask you to get naked anymore. You will strip down to your underwear, though." "That will still be a problem. They'll see me through that. It's not that small. A little secret. In that moment, you won't be hard at all. No one has ever been hard or even thinking about sex in those moments. Look, hurry up and get here. Hurry." Without saying goodbye, Payne hung up. That upset DJ just a little bit, but he had to let it go. His task was simply to get to his dorm room and change shirts. When DJ gets to his room, he decides he needs to freshen up. He doesn't really know what he's about to get into. He helped his roommate get into the concert, so he wasn't worried about him entering, or even if he did, he had long ago learned to simply grab a towel and hide his junk. DJ stripped naked, pulled out his wash towel, walked to the sink, and lathered with his soap. He let out a little laugh because he was about to give himself a whole bath. That's what his grandmother called it, a whole bath. He got all the spots he needed to touch up. he went over each part three times. He spent extra care under his arms and the area hidden by his underwear. He brushed his teeth. When he was done, he pushed back the urge to jack off. Instead, he got dressed and put on his white tee, jeans, sneakers, and his favorite baseball cap. He grabbed his keys, wallet, and cell phone and ran to his car. No one told DJ to go back to the house, but because of the story Payne told him, he thought it would be better to knock on the back door to the frat house. He parked away from the frat house. He didn't want anyone to see his car. Before leaving the car, DJ took off his cap and ran his fingers through his hair. It didn't take much for DJ to make certain his hair was presentable. He said a silent prayer to himself as he walked across the street. The fraternity house he was trying to get to was behind other, bigger, and more presentable fraternity houses. That didn't bother DJ at all. To him, the fact that he even had a house on campus, while there were none on the other campus, was the real story. All the fraternity houses had two floors. Most were greeted with white Greco-Roman columns at the front of their houses, but the front door was well lit on every fraternity house. As DJ walked up, he noticed that most people avoided the front entrance and instead opted to use the back door. He decided to follow suit as he approached the Epsilon house. It was also darker in the back of those houses than in the front. The Epsilon house was in the center of the fraternity houses in that circle. Their house was the only house that could be seen from every angle by anyone who came to the area. And just like that, DJ recalled the story of Tommy. He had forgotten about Tommy and what he had done to Payne and what he could have done to him in the shower room. This was the very spot Payne was first introduced to Tommy. DJ realized Tommy propositioned Payne in full view of others. To be sure, it was dark and no one really heard that conversation, but the gall it would have taken to do such a thing was here. DJ's stomach tightened. DJ prayed another silent prayer, hoping Tommy would not answer the door. When DJ felt his anxiety fade, he knocked on the door twice. The door was cracked open, and he could tell no one was in the room, so he walked in and said hello several times. As he walked through the kitchen, he knew he was coming to another open area. He didn't hear anyone, so he assumed no one was there. He opened the door to a well-lit room. The room was clean. There were tables connected to the wall with chairs beneath them. It was clear this area was meant for study. It even had a whiteboard on the wall. DJ could hear voices on the other side of the fraternity house of men acting silly, of whom he knew, no doubt, would be members of the fraternity. To get to the voices, he needed to walk through a short hallway. He reasoned that if he came through the direction, they might misread how he came through the fraternity house. So he turned around. As he turned around, someone came from the other side, saw him, and stopped him. He recognized the face but couldn't remember his name. The guy smiled at him and told him to go upstairs. DJ was thankful it was someone he worked with on the scrapbook. Without saying a word, he walked up as directed. The stairwell was a narrow stairwell. Halfway up, DJ realized he could hear every conversation going on in the fraternity house. The fraternity house was relatively small. It only had 7 rooms upstairs and 2 downstairs. He was ushered into the president's office. He knew because this was the place Payne printed pictures to use for the scrapbook. The office had a table for a computer and a bed with no sheets. There were 5 other men in the room already. These men are his potential line brothers. As soon as he entered, another member rushed into the cramped room with bare walls and ordered each of them to take their shirts off. He was a short and muscular guy. He was clearly younger than DJ. DJ felt this terrible urge to defy him because of his age. But it was more than his age. The guy was at least a foot shorter than him, with a musty smell, wearing glasses, and behavior that reminded him of little kids he would play with in his neighborhood when he was in grade school. But DJ complied. One by one, members of the fraternity looked at their bodies. He felt like they were meat, that they were all about to eat. It didn't seem to be a sexual thing, and yet the members seemed to be delighted by their bodies. DJ couldn't fathom what this was about. Then their attention was placed on the big stubby guy. The short dude with glasses shouted, "Put your shirt back on, you big fat fuck!" Then all the members started laughing. DJ was truly baffled but continued to do as instructed. As soon as they left, the curly-haired almond guy, colored guy, who might be on his line, turned his attention to everyone in the room. The room was dimly lit. From there, DJ stood. He could barely see anyone's body, but he could sense the curly-haired guy's gaze. He seemed to look at DJ with such disgust. DJ didn't understand why that could be. DJ had always been non-threatening and charming. Everyone likes DJ. Often, DJ sees that as a curse, but in this moment, he is certainly questioning what he sees. Then the curly-haired guy says, "They clearly like my body and think I'm the most attractive one here. I think I'm going to make the line." DJ almost choked. DJ never really thought about his looks in comparison to others. DJ values looks and understands its importance in society, but he just wasn't used to men comparing themselves against others openly, especially in a setting like this. Also, the comment almost felt like a challenge of some sort, as if the curly-haired guy was saying he was more of a man than DJ. Moreover, he clearly hated the arrogance of this guy. Plus, his attitude told him that he will try to take over things. But DJ also knew neither of them was a member, so he decided not to dwell on things he could not control. The short guy with glasses came back into the room. This time, he was calm and reassuring. Without saying a word, he lined the six of them by height. While he was arranging everyone, a person he had never seen before walked into the room. Either this was a white guy or an extremely fair-skinned brother. He was taller than DJ, dark brown hair, small glasses on his face, and a weird walk. Instantly, he knew this white guy is a different white guy from the one who wore a cap from the informational. Then he started talking. At that moment, it was probably clear to everyone this cat was white. Not just that, this dude couldn't stop talking. As he turned, DJ started to build a newfound respect for the men of Epsilon at Weston. Were they really entertaining another white guy after turning down another who showed up in a baseball cap? DJ made a mental note to himself to get to know this guy better. Before he walked in, everyone was quiet. The moment he entered the room, everyone started talking. Everyone except DJ. They all knew each other or had seen each other on campus in some way or another. DJ didn't know any of them, and they weren't spending much time trying to get to know him either. Then, the person who ushered him upstairs walked into the room and told them to shut the fuck up. As they had practiced this, everyone stopped talking. Not a minute later, they started calling the aspirants down. One by one, each man in the small room was called downstairs and questioned as they were told to look at a single light. Each aspirant sat at the end of a long table, and all the members of the chapter was in the room. It was intimidating. DJ had not seen all the members in one room before. While he stared, he was hurled countless questions and expected to answer each question without thought. The questions they asked were personal and at times vile. They asked him about his sexuality and whether he sucked dick. Someone said he wouldn't mind if DJ sucked his dick right there. DJ's face was blank. There was no response whatsoever. Inside, DJ felt like he had been found out. To be fair, these are similar questions he heard asked to the other guys that were questioned before him. So he was prepared for the questions. But by the end of the night, DJ learned that he made line. After about 2 hours of being given history of the fraternity, he was finally allowed to leave. Once outside, they had exchanged phone numbers and personal information. But before leaving, they were asked to write down their social security numbers by a member. The member who was asked to keep their information was the tallest member in their chapter. He was thin, fair-skinned, blue eyes, and had brown corn silked hair. He was easily the most handsome man in the chapter. DJ remembered. He was not one of the guys who enjoyed some of the questions they were asking. This tall Adonis sat along the wall on one of those nasty sofas. In fact, DJ remembered this handsome white chocolate treat sat on one wall while Payne sat in a chair against another wall. DJ realized that neither of them really asked many questions, as if this phase was meaningless to them. Payne had mentioned this fair-skinned brother several times. DJ knew Payne had a slight crush on Grant. DJ knew this was Grant because Payne was very exact about his physical appearance, and he was right about everything. Grant was a god. He was smooth and suave. His approach was always appropriate and likable. But there was something different with Grant. He had a girlfriend who happened to be this white chick he remembered seeing at the frat house. But now that DJ was around him, he could sense there was more to him than someone who was extremely polished. If anyone would ever ask, he would swear Grant were at least bisexual. As they all went their separate ways after their first night online, DJ walked back to his car across the street and sent Payne a quick text. It was too late for him to drive all the way back to Dawn. He was extremely tired. Plus, he also knew Payne would want to know what he was experiencing. Payne demanded he report to his place. DJ didn't know if that was from excitement or because he was now online. DJ left the parking lot of the law school. He noticed the white sports car was following him. DJ was sufficiently paranoid about all matters, so he made several wrong turns. The car that followed him finally went in a different direction. DJ stopped at a gas station to get gas. He sent Payne a text explaining the situation. He could tell Payne was appreciative for taking the precaution. The gas station was just up the street from Payne's campus apartment. DJ was used to the area at this point. He would drive into the apartment complex from a back way. Tonight, as he drives towards Payne's apartment, he notices the same white sports car that followed him. It is now 3 a.m. This has to be more than a coincidence. So, DJ parks on the side of the apartment complex, and instead of walking to the apartment on the first floor, he walks upstairs to keep an eye on the car. He can't immediately see the car, then, out of nowhere, the car reappears, and as big as day, he sees plates for Epsilon on the front of the car. It has New Jersey plates. He realizes this is the car of his dean. He remembered his dean saying he was from New Jersey. DJ drops low, as if he were crouching. For fear of being caught, his body lays flat on the floor. He begins to move almost like a snake and moves extremely slow. Then he finds his phone ringing. He pulls the phone from his pocket. It's the same number from earlier tonight. He realizes this must be his dean calling. Not wanting to start off on the wrong foot, he answers the call while lying on his stomach. "What the fuck you doing? Where you at?" DJ panics. He can't figure out how his dean could have figured him out so soon, so DJ lies. "I just got gas, but while I was there, Payne asked me for notes from the class we're in together." "Oh, okay, cool. Just asking. Hit me up later." DJ could tell his dean, Quincy, knew he was lying. "Okay." DJ peeked up in search of the car as he places the cell phone back into his left-hand pocket. He could see the car in the same place. He continued to move in a snake-like motion that takes at least 10 minutes to move about 50 feet. Before he makes it to the stairs, he looks up to see if the car was still downstairs and notices the car has left. He gets up and walks towards Payne's door. Once inside Payne's apartment, Payne greeted him with a kiss, then pushes him against the door. Their kiss lasted at least a minute. It was a passionate kiss. DJ could sense true pleasure in how their relationship was about to change. Payne had already changed out of his suit and was wearing sweats, socks, and a V-neck t-shirt. DJ knew sex wasn't on Payne's mind, and he was relieved for that. He had a lot on his mind and needed time and Payne's help to process all that he saw and had recently been through. After a night of talking and planning, Payne reassures DJ that he would have heard by now if his fraternity brother suspected something. DJ wasn't altogether impressed by Payne's declaration. Payne tended to think he was the smartest piece on the chessboard. DJ, however, knew that intelligence came in different forms. DJ also understood people. He knew his Dean Quincy was going to be a problem. But he heard enough from Payne to soothe his mind enough to fall asleep unburdened. When DJ wakes up the next morning, Payne had already left to go to his classes. DJ showers, brushes his teeth, and watches a bit of TV before leaving. After eating some grits and washing the dishes he's used, he leaves Payne's apartment and walks back to his car. This is early January, and yet the weather is relatively warm. DJ can't help but think about how happy he is with pretty much everything in his life right now. I've finally fallen in love with someone who loves me back. It's like we're working towards the same things. We help each other, and we've got each other's back. We trust each other. My grades are better than ever. I've been chosen to go online for Epsilon, and in about 6 weeks, I'll be a member. There's absolutely nothing bad on my horizon. DJ was truly drunk with euphoria. As he walked closer to the door, something told him to look around. A nervous energy filled the pit of DJ's stomach. Paranoia found a home within his thoughts. Oh God, where is Quincy's car? DJ, in quick panicky motions, looks in every direction for Quincy's car. He can't find it, but moves as fast as he can to get inside his car. As soon as he sits down, he notices a note lodged between the windshield and the wiper. On the windshield is a note that reads, "I know what you two are up to. You don't have to lie to me. I'm cool. It would just be better if you told the truth, though." Okay, so I do realize that it took like forever for me to record that. I get it. I had to do it that way. It was just that, you know, there was no ending that I really, really, truly liked other than the actual ending. So what I normally do is I go back and I explain what happened, what really happened, what didn't happen, if things were taken out of order, you know, stuff like that. All right. So for the most part, based on my memory, remember, this has been over 20 years, at 25 years, actually going on 30 years now. based on my memory, I believe this is how the night actually went. Now, I could have, it's quite possible that I got days confused, because from my memory, my actual first night, I don't know, I'm confused. I'm confused. So all of those things happened. It might not have happened in that order. All right. So the most important things were me going to the frat house, my interactions with my line brothers, and then what happened once I left the fraternity house and went to Payne's house. All of that, 100% of that actually happened. Even the car following me, it was 100% my line brother. I'm not my line brother, my dean. It was my dean. He was following me. Now, there's a reason why he was following me. I found out later, after I crossed. I found out much later. But he was following me. He knew exactly where I was going. He just, like, he was one of those human lie detectors. He knew when people were bullshitting. Plus, he also he knew something. He had some information that he kind of sat on, right? He honestly sat on information, meaning no one knew but him. Okay, and you know it will be revealed a little bit later. I'm not gonna explain it right now. So I'm going to his house, right? I'm doing what we normally do, right? At night, I go to his apartment. We chill. We, you know, either he'll cook for me. We'll watch TV. We'll have sex. We'll, you know, whatever. Or we'll do all of the above, or in different orders. But anyway, on that particular night, I went, and of course, my dean followed me. And I ain't lying. I was on my stomach, trying to get to his apartment. And mind you, this is the chapter president's apartment that I'm going to. I'm an aspirant. Like, this is scandalous shit. Like, for real, scandalous. At least, you know, 30 years ago, like, shit, fucking right, that shit was scandalous. Anyway, so so I'm doing that, and this is another thing I haven't got to, but my line brother, the guy that I just met, the white guy, he lives directly across from Payne. He could look out his window and he could see me knocking on the door if he wanted to. Well, that's another story. I'm gonna save that story for another time. But so you know, 30 years ago there was no text messages, right? So he couldn't call me. None of that was happening, right? That's one thing that didn't happen. You know, none of that happened. So I eventually get inside the apartment. All of that stuff happens. The next morning when I leave, that note was waiting for me. And you know, the exact wording of the note, I probably have that wrong. However, that was the context of the note. When I tell you I shit several bricks right then and there, I'm not lying to you. The place that I parked, the place that I parked, only someone who had been around there before would have paid attention to where I parked. You know what I'm saying? And my car was smaller than most of the cars there. So in order for someone to see it, they were looking for it. The note that was left, I ain't gonna lie, I thought it was a chick that wrote the note because, you know, nice handwriting. I guess I'm alluding to the fact of who wrote the note. So I guess I could say it was the dean who wrote the note, right? And he was basically saying, I know what the fuck y'all doing. Tell the truth. The fuck? Ooh, Jesus. I was 19 years old, man. I was 19 fucking years old. I wasn't even 20 yet. Fuck. This was the early 90s. Scandalous shit. But yeah. All of that shit happened. All of that shit happened. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of New Love with DJ Holmes. It is truly appreciated. If you listen to me from Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Breaker, Stitcher, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, iTunes, CastBox, or Overcast, you can contact me directly by emailing djholmes1pairing@gmail.com. All you have to do is record yourself and email your message to djholmes1pairing@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening to New Love.